Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Vicksburg, Mississippi, and served as a Marine in Vietnam. He worked for General Motors for 22 years and left in 1989 to start his own steel company. Today he's the chairman and CEO of SET Enterprises, and in 1997 he founded the Real Life 101 Scholarship and Mentoring Program, which has awarded over 150 scholarships to inner city young men. His name? Sid Taylor. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Sid Taylor, the chairman, CEO, and founder of SET Enterprises in Warren, Michigan. Sid, welcome. An honor to have you.
It's an honor to be here, Jack.
Can we start by going back to Vicksburg, Mississippi, and talk about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Well, my childhood, I grew up in a very humble environment in Vicksburg, Mississippi. We didn't have a lot of money, but we didn't know that because we had two caring parents. My father was a Baptist minister, but he didn't have a lot of money, but he realized the value of education, and he sent us to a Catholic school. While he was a Baptist, he sent us to a Catholic school. And through that education, it really gave us a broader perspective just on the world and how we saw the world, and certainly has had a lot of influence on who I am today. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom. It was seven of us. I had five brothers and one sister. And we walked 2.2 miles one way to school every single day.
Uphill both ways.
Yes, yes. And that built a lot of character in us. And I can't sit here and tell you that we knew that at the time, because all we knew as youngsters was, man, this is a long walk.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
The biggest thing I learned from my mom, all the obvious things, you know, my mom was caring and she was nurturing and, you know, she was there for us, when you're crying and those types of things. The dad played the role what is back in that time was traditional for a father. You know, he was the breadwinner. He was the advocate. He was also the strong hand that kept us in line. And when we stepped out of line, he didn't have any problem in putting us back in line. And I think that's one of the reasons that I'm here today, because he kept us in line.
From 13 to 16, you picked cotton in the fields, 9 hours a day, for $3.50 a day. What did that teach you?
Well, you know, you talk about character again. I didn't realize that's what that was building, but that's exactly what it was doing. And those are some of the times that I look back and I just say, how in the heck did we do that every day for 9 hours a day out in the sun? And many days it was over 100 degrees, but we endured. And like I said, you know, it was a mindset. You know, you didn't know much more than that at that time, and that's what was available to us. We wanted to earn money; those were our opportunities, and we took advantage of it. In the process of all that, it helped. Give me a perspective. And that perspective didn't manifest itself until later on in life, and even today. I still think about, you know, those hot, intense and hardworking days that also provided, I think, a foundation for me and where I am today.
You go from hot, intense days in Vicksburg, Mississippi. You join the Marines and you go to Nam. Why did you join the Marines?
You know, interesting enough, if you recall, the 60s were very turbulent times. One of the other pretty much significant things that that occurred during that period of time is in the South, and in Vicksburg in particular, you know, segregation was still alive and well. In fact, I was telling you about the schools that I went to. Our schools were, we were not allowed to go to the schools, you know, with whites at that time. And so we went to all black schools, and we couldn't drink out of fountains. The fountain said white only and black only. And the bathrooms were white only and black only. We went to the movie. You had to go to the black section, and then there was a white section. That's just the way things were. Now, I can tell you that that's just the way things were at the time, and it didn't pose any real problems for us because, you know, we had a very happy home. My mom and dad provided a very good home for us, and we were just kids, and that's just the way things were. And so, you know, we took it in stride. And, you know, we just, you know, lived our life and we did the best we could with what we had.
When you go into your headquarters, said Taylor, and go into your lobby, you have one book in that lobby. It's on the coffee table. UMSC, A Complete History. There's a special brotherhood of Marines. Why?
That's absolutely right, Jack. And again, just following up on the previous question about, you know, Marine Corps. again, those turbulent times that, if you recall, significant that year was Martin Luther King was assassinated in 68 of that year. Robert Kennedy was assassinated, and the trifactor that year was the fact that my dad passed on May 18th. 1968. So three very significant events occurred in my life that are etched in my memory forever. And ironically enough, when I returned from my dad's funeral, I was living here at the time because I moved here in 1966 after graduating from high school. And when I went back to my dad's funeral, at that time, if you remember, the Vietnam War was full steam ahead, and I had a draft notice, and a lot of things had occurred, and I just knew it was a matter of time before I was going to get called and. And I didn't fight it. So I remember going down to what was then called Fort Wayne. And I remember saying to myself, you know, I want to go to where I feel I'm going to have the best opportunity to survive. And I had read a lot about the Marine Corps. But initially, I went to the Navy recruiter. And I wasn't too satisfied with that. I also went to the Air Force, and they told me that, you know, well, you know, there's a lengthier process. And the fact that I had my draft notice, they said, look, if you already been drafted, you know, there's not a lot we could do. And the only ones that were open was the Marine Corps. And so I went in, talked to a recruiter. And he says, you're just the guy that we need. And the rest is history. So I left out of there, and a few weeks later, I was headed to San Diego, California.
The few, the proud, the Marine.
Yes.
We're talking to Sid Taylor. He has a bumper sticker on his car. Once a Marine, always a Marine. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Sid Taylor, who earned a bachelor's degree in business management from the University of Detroit. Sid, you go to work for General Motors. Tell us about your 22-year career at GM.
My 22-year career with General Motors actually started in 66 prior to going into the Marine Corps. And in 1968 is when I went in, but I actually started working at General Motors in 1966, and I worked there until, you know, actually went into the Marine Corps. And so that is how it became 22 years. When I returned from Vietnam, I went back to GM. They had my job waiting for me. And that's when I started my career. I was very gung-ho, and I can tell you a little story, if I could, that, you know, you asked me earlier about my experience in Vicksburg and making it $3.50 in the cotton fields. When I went to General Motors and I had my interview, and they told me that, if you talk about a contrast, I'd been making $3.50 an hour, and they told me I was going to make $5.50. $3.50 a day, and they told me I was going to make $5.50 an hour. I said, these people are crazy. and obviously, I took that job, and I was so happy to have a job, and I was a very hard worker. I was I'm very mechanical inclined, and so the jobs came very easy for me. And one of the things, I didn't know much about, you know, unions at the time. And what happened is, you know, they saw how fast I caught on to everything, and every day I came in, they were putting me on a new job. And I would learn the job, and I would master it. And the next thing you know, I knew every job in the department. And eventually, you know, and I didn't know this, I was a youngster, and the older workers were, you know, they were kind of chuckling about, because most of them, they didn't want to be jumping from one job to the next every day. And here I come in every day, and they'd just throw me on a job, and I'd get in there, I'd master it. And so first of all, it started off kind of like a joke. But then when I learned all the jobs, I gained the respect of all of the other workers. And eventually, they made me the group leader in the department.
Let's jump ahead. You're 39 years old. You have 22 years with GM. Mm-hmm. You and Donna have two children. You've got it made. And you leave General Motors. Back then, nobody left General Motors. Why did you leave?
Yes, and fast forwarding, you have to... After, you know, I got, you know, about 18 years in, I can tell you that I got the entrepreneur bug. And I left after 22 years, but I had actually started thinking about it and planning for it prior to that. And so about the time I got to 22 years, I got to the point where I had put a business plan in place. I had lined up financing. And it was time for me to leave. Now, one of the reasons that I was motivated to leave, because I really saw myself going a lot further than where I was at the time, even though GM had fast-tracked me from a management standpoint and I had been in a lot of the responsible positions, I wanted to be a CEO. And I said to myself, you know, if I'm going to be a CEO, I'm probably going to have to go out and do it on my own. And that's what motivated me and inspired me to go out and start looking for other opportunities. And that was a driving force behind me leaving after 22 years.
What did your wife Donna say when you told her?
When I came home and I told her what I was getting ready to do, she thought I was nuts. And it wasn't just her. It was my colleagues who had a lot of respect for me that I had. I mean, General Motors was like my family, you know, and I still consider General Motors my family. Because what I do today, I learn so much of it from my experiences and exposure at General Motors. And my wife, like everybody else, you know, what are you thinking? You have 8 years to retirement. That was the mentality. And I knew myself that had I not left at that time, I never would have left.
You start SET Enterprises, said Taylor. Tell us about SET Enterprises, Inc.
Well, SET Enterprises, current day, this is our 22nd year. And we are a steel processor. That means we slit steel and we blank steel. We process it for the automotive industry primarily. We have our headquarters in Warren. We have a facility in New Boston, Michigan, a facility in Chicago Heights, Illinois. We have another facility in Indiana. And recently, last year, I started two new businesses, a duct manufacturing company in the city of Detroit, as well as a construction company. So the two companies we started last year are the two new businesses, and that was all driven by my appreciation and my friendship and my commitment to help the mayor and the city of Detroit. And so I am proud to have those two cities, those two businesses in the city. And I look forward to growing those businesses and providing jobs and opportunities, you know, for the Detroit residents.
1997, you bought an abandoned plant, which had been vacant for 15 years, near Linden and Livernois. Tell us about that plant.
Yes. I had an opportunity with a book of business with a company out of Canada. And they had to take that business out of their facility, and on a last minute basis, they told me that we've got to have this business moved over the weekend. And literally, they shipped the business to me. I had to go and find a vacant building somewhere. I found a building that was that could accommodate the business out in Livonia, Michigan. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to hire Detroiters. And so, but because of the circumstances, I had to find what was available. So I hired the workers from Detroit. I bused them to Livonia, and until I could find a building in Detroit. So what I did is I started looking for buildings in Detroit. I found a building in my old neighborhood that had been vacant for about 15 years, and there was drug activity, there was prostitution, there was garbage all over the streets, and it's an area that's 125 square acres of industrial buildings and businesses. And when I went over there, you know, I said, "Boy, this is going to be a challenge." But the key thing was it was located right in the heart of the city where I was getting my workers from. And I said, you know, it's a challenge, but from a giving back to the community standpoint, this is what's needed to revitalize that area. And that started my plight in 1997 in that particular business.
Well, with Sid Taylor, think about this, steel business, believes in the city, love for the people of the city. There's another man that was in the steel business, had a love for the city. Today, he's the mayor. Sid is much younger than Dave Bing and dresses as well as Dave Bing. So maybe there's something in the future. Anything is possible. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Sid Taylor, and in 2009, he received the Award of Excellence, which is the highest award offered by the Tuskegee Airmen. Quite an honor. When you hear the phrase, success is a journey, not a destination, what does that mean to you, Sid Taylor?
It magnifies my life, because that's exactly what it's been. It's been a journey. And I know sometimes we say that and we really don't appreciate what it really means, but there's a lot of hills and valleys and along the way, you know, sometimes, you know, you feel like you've lost your way, but, what's important is, that you keep yourself, you pick yourself up when you're down and you keep yourself moving forward. So, you know, yes, it's been a journey. But that's what life is. And the decisions you make on the path of your journey has all to do with whether or not you either succeed or you fail, or you do good or you do bad, or you soar. And I think so much of that is up to the individual as to how they handle the challenges that those journeys present to each of us in our lives.
The last 3 years, if you've been a supplier, not only to the big three, but really to any company, it's been tough. And when we were meeting a couple weeks ago in your office, you said, and I quote you, "Jack, we're having fun." I haven't heard that much in the last 3 years. What do you mean about "we're having fun"?
Well, we're having fun now simply because of what you said. You know, things had been so bad over the last 3 years, and now they're a lot better. It's fun now. It wasn't. I can't tell you that 3 years ago. It was not fun. It was survival. That's what many of us did. And I can tell you that a lot of my colleagues, they weren't as fortunate. They businesses went under. Lots of them. I'm sure you know some yourself. And we survived. And we survived because, number one, my employees are a group of very committed people. And they are like my family. Had I not had very good, dedicated and capable employees, you know, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you today. But and so it's not just me. It's my employees. You know, they are a group of individuals that's committed to doing their jobs, and they're doing them at a high level. And yes, I set the agenda, and I basically, you know, set the format. But and they follow my leadership. But if it wasn't for my employees, then obviously, you know, we would not be having fun. But we are having fun.
What role has God and faith played in your life, Sid Taylor?
God is the absolute. I mean, it's the absolute in terms of, I can tell you this, Jack, that when I was in Vietnam, and I didn't appreciate the spiritual background that my father had instilled in me. My dad was a Baptist minister. I used to go in church on Sundays, and during the week I'd go to a mass. So I had a lot of religion. Now, appreciate that. I didn't have a good appreciation for it until I went to Vietnam and the challenges that we went through as Marines and some of the horrific stuff that we did, which I'm sorry for even to today, and it still haunts me. But I wouldn't be here today if I didn't have a good spiritual background, because there were times that is where I got my strength, by praying and believing in spirituality. And so my spirituality guides me today. And so it's a part of me.
A few months ago, I had a man, Ron Wilson, business leader, mm-hmm. very Christ-centered. And he made a statement that he's been severely blessed by God. You've been severely blessed by God, too. What does that mean to you?
Yes, I have, because, you know, and just to put it in perspective, it's something that I could expand on for the remaining part of this interview. But just to put it in perspective, when you look around the world, when you look, when you just watch television every day and you see the kind of horrific things that's going on in people's lives, people losing their homes, losing their businesses, you know, don't know where their next meal is coming from. And here I'm sitting in a position where I am. I own my own business. I've got my family, my health. You know, there's not much more to say. That is a blessing in and of itself, that God has blessed me to the point where I'm in the category where I am. And I do not take that for granted. I certainly don't say that in a pompous way. I'm just a blessed person, and I feel my role now is to find ways to give back to the community and use my blessings to help bless others.
You're a very humble man, Sid Taylor. You don't smoke, you never smoked, you never drank, and you don't swear. How have you been successful as a Marine, as a business person, you know, tier one, tier two of the big three, and not swear?
You know, it's interesting. My father never did allow it. It wasn't allowed at the Catholic school. And so when I became an adult, it wasn't part of me. And even though I was around it a lot and I heard it a lot, I mean, anybody will ask you, you're a Marine and you don't swear? Because that is one of the things that was endemic with the Marine Corps, in that, you know, it was a lot of swearing. But I just never did it. It's just like with the drinking. You know, my friends, they all did it, but I didn't do it. And I'll be honest with you. I cannot sit here and tell you that I was on a mission and I knew what I was doing at the time. It was just instilled in me, and I just felt that it wasn't the right thing to do. And I got to a point in my life where I said, I've gone this long without it, so why do it now? I was tempted a lot, but I never did. You know, the bad language thing, I just think that words hurt people. And a lot of times, you know, curse words can send a different kind of signal to a person as opposed to using, you know, normal language. And so I have disciplined myself not to use bad language or bad words.
I think we're in a fight for the soul of America. I think we're in a fight for the soul of the world. And we got so much greed out there, and all of us are guilty of it, versus sacrifice, that greatest generation, the sacrifice. Sid Taylor, talk to us about greed versus sacrifice.
You're exactly right, and boy, this is one I could talk to you about for the next hour. But you know, one of our biggest problems is that, you know, we want it all, and we think we can have it all without any sacrifice. Well, it just doesn't work that way, and I think, as especially as Americans, you know, we always talk about, you know, the American way of life and you know, the white picket fence and, you know, and those kinds of things. And I think that in and of itself set a standard for us, you know, and everybody believes that you can have everything as an American. And so the American dream, as we talk about. And in the process of that, it somehow makes all of us in some way, shape or form, self-centered. And too many times we get ourselves caught up to where, you know, we strictly concentrating on me. And until we, I think, do some soul searching and realize that if the world is going to be a better place and our community is going to be a better place, we're all going to have to rethink how we dedicate ourselves and rededicate ourselves to communities and sacrifice.
We're talking to Sid Taylor, a leader, a humble servant, a great dad, great father, and well-loved within this community. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Sid Taylor. And in 1997, he founded Real Life 101 Scholarship and Mentoring Program, which has awarded over 150 scholarships to inner city young men and over 500 laptop computers. Fantastic. Why, Sid, inner city scholarships versus Children's Hospital of Michigan, cancer, you know, the soldiers coming back from Iraq, Afghanistan? Why inner city young men?
Well, it goes back to a business that you alluded to earlier. In 1997, the people from the neighborhood was coming to my business asking for jobs, and I just noticed how many of them couldn't even fill out applications. And I said, that's a big problem. And in particular, you know, I looked at the African-American males who, you know, when I started looking at the data, and this is something that a lot of people don't realize, and this is empirical data that I'm talking about. African-American males in inner cities, you know, have a 1 in 3 chance of going to prison. They, in Detroit, only less than 41% of them are graduating from high school. Now, that in and of itself creates a very, very serious problem for all of us, because we all know that if we don't invest in them on the front end, we're going to certainly invest in them on the back end, and it's not going to be positive. And so that inspired me to say, okay, I can either realize what the problem is and looking at the data. I can either just look at the data like mostly everyone else and not do anything about it, or I can do something about it. And so I launched this Real Life 101 program to assist these fellows in getting themselves educated. And I started the Real Life 101 organization. And to date, Jack, we have disbursed over $650,000 in scholarship dollars to 188 students. And we've given out over 650 laptop computers. All of our students have mentors. This is our 12th year. We're having our 12th annual gala this year downtown at the Renaissance in the Marriott. Mr. Stedman Graham is our guest speaker this year. Mr. Michael A. Thompson of the Michigan Chronicle is our master ceremony. And we expect 700 to 800 guests celebrating the fact that, you know, we're going to have at least 30 of these young fellows who ordinarily might have been either dealing drugs or something else, but they're getting their degrees. And we're going to be celebrating that this year. And their families are going to be there. And we are really looking forward to this 12th annual gala, which is going to be our grandest ever.
If we want to learn more about that or to help, how would we reach out?
Go to our website, www.reallife101.org. And www.reallife101.org. And you can go to that website and you can kind of go through all the different links. It's a very comprehensive website. And you can donate from there. You can become a mentor. You know, it's again, it's very comprehensive. And I would like to invite each of you to watch the video. The video basically is about a 6 or 7 minute video. And it gives you a very, very broad perspective of what we do, how we do it, why we do it.
Speaking of which, Sid Taylor, what have these young men that you've helped taught you, Sid Taylor?
Well, when I see them, I see myself when I was their age. And I know the struggles that I had, and it was a different time then. And I look at the challenges that they have today, and their challenges are much different than the ones that I had. I guess if I had to say what did he teach me? Teach me the fact that you've got to have hope. But to have that hope, they need other individuals giving them a reason to have hope. And so I'm hoping that I'm providing inspiration for them, and they are certainly providing inspiration for me because they represent the future.
In an article in Smart Business recently, you said key points about running and building a business, be part of the community. If you're going to be in business, you're a leader whether you want to be or not. Don't try to do it all yourself. Find the right fit. Lead by example and take chances. Talk to us about taking chances.
Yes, you know, there's an old saying that we all are familiar with. The greater the risk, the greater the reward. If you don't take risk, then, you know, you're probably just going to be mediocre. And so I would encourage all of our young people to look to see beyond where you are and to dream. You know, everything starts with a dream. And don't be afraid to dream. Don't be afraid to step out there on faith. And certainly don't be afraid to take risk. I mean, that is how you separate yourself from the average person. By going out, being innovative, and taking risk, and setting the stage for your own journey, because that's exactly what all of us have a journey that we all have to lead, and the direction your journey goes has a lot to do with whether or not, you know, you step out there and take chances.
So, Taylor, what did the Marine Corps teach you about building and running a successful business?
Well, one of the things the Marine Corps did is they taught me, the Marine Corps taught me so many things, but the main thing that it taught me was, you know, being loyal and being stern, but also being compassionate. You know, there are many times that as a CEO, you have to make tough decisions. And, if you don't have, you know, it within you, those decisions sometimes can take a toll on you, and it can affect your personal life. And so one of the things that the Marine Corps taught me was not just in being a leader, but, you know, how to be able to make the tough decisions, and then you live with those tough decisions, and not let them affect you in a way that takes away from who you are and how you do things. And that was a very important time in my life, being an ex-Marine.
If there's a person tonight listening that's really down, in despair, and they say, wow, what a role model, what a man, and they're saying, how do I get that hope that he has? Sid Taylor, how do they get hope?
Well, a question that I think each of us have to look inside of ourselves. And again, I would say everyone has a different dream, and our lives take us in the different places. And wherever, you know, any person out there, you know, right now, look at where you are right now. Ask yourself what you want to be, and then ask yourself, what am I going to do to put myself on the right course? Not how the government, not how my parents, not how, you know, my teacher, but ask yourself, what am I going to do to take myself on the course in the journey that I would like to travel? So I would say, you're self-empowered. So ask yourself, what are you going to do to spearhead your future?
Are you high on the future of Detroit?
I am very high on the future of Detroit. You know, Detroit has so much potential. And I believe that with Mayor Bing, you know, who's my good friend, and he's a leader and former businessman himself. And I think having that business approach with he in that position and the governor, I believe that's a winning combination.
Sid Taylor, honor to meet you, honor to have you. You are a role model. Keep making your mom and dad proud every day. Keep making all those nuns proud every day. And all the men you served with, keep it up.
Thank you.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.
Believe in yourself.